tonight's Monroe City Council meeting. This is the City Council meeting for October 24th, 2017. The time right now is 7:01 p.m. Ms. Atkinson, will you please call the roll?
Certainly. Council members present and establishing a quorum are Scarborough, Cutabak, Bethelton, and Campbell.
Thank you. And earlier this evening, I received a message from Councilmember Campbell that he would not be here this evening, and Councilmember Hanford would be here late. So without objection, we'll consider Councilmember Campbell as being excused. We'll note for the record that Councilmember Hanford and Councilmember Davis entered the chambers. And Councilmember Rasmussen, will you please give us the pledge?
Okay, thank you.
I pledge allegiance to the United States of America, and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. The first item we have on the agenda this evening is a proclamation. I'll go ahead and read this into the record. Whereas the Monroe Police Department, Sandwich County Fire District Number 7, and Monroe Department of Corrections personnel keep our community safe by increasing public awareness of methods for crime prevention and fire prevention, and whereas these devoted first responders show dedication by putting their lives on the line to save others, protect property, and uphold the law, and whereas selfless concern and the courage to endure whatever ordeal they face are commonly held values among our police officers, firefighters, and corrections officers, and whereas hard work and commitment are the core of public safety as expressed through these agencies' missions and vision statements, those statements being the Monroe Police Department's mission is to be dedicated to the pursuit of excellence in providing professional law enforcement services, and Snohomish County Fire District 7's mission is earning trust through action by the vision of being a trusted leader serving the community with a commitment to innovation and improvement. And the Monroe Department of Corrections mission is to improve public safety through the vision of working together for safe communities. Now, therefore, I, Jeffrey Thomas, do hereby issue this recognition as a true expression of appreciation and a symbol of gratitude for the exceptional quality of public service provided by police officers, firefighters, and corrections officers as they continue to dedicate themselves to keeping our citizens and community safe and proclaim the week of November 13th through November 19th, 2017 as police, fire, and corrections officers appreciation week in the city of Monroe, and urge all citizens to join me in observance of this special week. I'd like to go ahead, actually I am inviting Chief Quinzer, Chief Meek, and the Superintendent Ogunland to come forward to receive these proclamations. Thank you. Council members, can you please join me? I just have the preview line up right here. We'll have council on our flanks or behind us. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Chief Meek, thank you very much. I think there are two. Chief Spencer, thank you very much. Just want to get hung up. Great. Thank you, everybody.
There you go. Mark this in case.
Thank you. We can reach this. Thank you. The next item that we have on our agenda this evening, under announcements and presentations, is the second item, which is AB 17-166. It's a presentation, Monroe and Sultan Trail and Town Connections, on the proposed Guy-Comish, Snohomish Water Trail Report. This is from Mr. Teague and Ms. Bennett from Snohomish County Parks and Recreation. Thank you both very much for coming this evening.
Thanks so much. It's wonderful to be back with you again. I was here, Kevin and I, Kevin Teague, and I were with you several months ago when we were talking about this exciting opportunity to focus on river access. And really tonight we're here to just talk about Monroe. We did a combined summary of the outcomes, and Fulton is included in there as well. We wanted to really acknowledge the participation that came forward from the community here. We assembled a team of local experts and brought in those Washington Society of Landscape Architect members to contribute to the effort. And I just really want to acknowledge Mike Farrell for his participation, and Ben Swanson, James Yap, your Parks Board member, and Chamber Director Yvonne Gallardo Van Orem, and also Councilman Jim Camp. We had an exciting set of tours. We brought the folks that I'm going to list off here, Jan Satterwaite from Vireo Design Studio, Aubrey Weeks from Site Workshop, Lucas Venice from the Watershed Company, Janelle Lotzgel, Jones & Jones, and then Christina Rose, National Park Service, and finally Lisa Baker of Rich Landscaping. We took folks out, we walked your sites, we drove all around the town and walked the town as well. The community, the issues that we were hoping to help you address and support your work were conceptual in nature only. These were ideas meant to spark ideas, spark conversations with the community, to continue the momentum that you have already generated and that you'd be talking more about in the coming days. The themes for this, the themes considered, were to look at ways to help Monroe, particularly the historic downtown, be a vibrant gateway hub for river experiences. We know that the community is tightly connected to the river, and we wanted to help surface some new ways we might think about that. Looking at history, heritage, and resources that are unique to your community and also part of the regional landscape of the valley. We were looking at ways to orient visitors to the river and reorient river users to the community. We were looking at ways to link the existing trails to future sites. We really wanted to support the effort to foster appreciation for salmon habitat. We have a lot of issues in our rivers for that. And we hope that these ideas will just complement and dovetail the work that you're already doing, and that's really our intent and purpose. So my colleague Kevin is going to present what these sort of ideas were and some of these drawings, and we'll have some Q&A at the end of that. Thanks.
All right, well, thank you. Thank you guys for your support of this. As Anique said, it was our honor to present the idea of this, and now we're coming back to you to say this is what happened. And we felt like it was a very successful event and very well supported by the city of Monroe. Let's see, what else I can do. No, not going to worry about it. That's all right. We, as Anique said, we took the members of the Washington chapter of the American Society of Landscape Architects, as well as our Monroe team, out to three locations to look at. We looked at Al Borland Park, the Lewis Street Park, and Lewis Street Boat Launch. And the team started with an overall analysis, really looking at that area of the city, breaking it down and kind of looking at how the different areas of the city relate to each other. And that was a lot of analysis. And so then they took that analysis and began providing recommendations based on the different areas. And thank you. These are some overall recommendations, and I hope you all got this packet. I think it was in your packet, so it would be really worth reading through at your leisure. But they made recommendations for how to connect the downtown core with the river, the Al Borland Park area with the town, with the city, as well as with the river, and then how other supporting amenities can assist with that. They also really looked closely at the parks and their connectivity together. I think as you really begin to look at this in plan view, You can see that that Monroe has this great pearl of parks right along the river. What a tremendous opportunity. And so as they began to analyze those areas, they made recommendations for each park specifically. At Lewis Street Park, the overriding theme there was connecting with trails, and how does that park invite people to the river, as well as once they come off the river to get up into the city. At Lewis Street Boat Launch, recommendations were things like parking lot enhancements, interpretive signage, and that's really one of the things that would make that feel less like a utilitarian space and more of a park space. And then improvements to the boat launch that would allow people to, especially paddle craft, tie their craft up or secure it, and then have the freedom to come into town. At Al Borland Park, just, you know, tremendous opportunities there in terms of how the trail system could be expanded, and again, signage, both wayfinding signage as well as interpretive signage, and then some parking suggestions, and then just lastly, retaining the shoreline ecology or enhancing that shoreline ecology. And I think as the Water Trail Coalition has met and talked about issues up and down the 84 miles of the Water Trail, the Skagit-Mohawk River in particular, giving people information about habitat restoration so that there's education so people understand what's happening in the rivers. Still allowing recreation, but then also supporting that habitat feature as well. So with that, we just wanted to give you that kind of quick overview and answer any questions that you might have. And actually, Councilman Camp was there, and several other, Mike and Ben were all there. Anybody else chime in with anything? But, any questions from you all?
Council members, any questions? Council member Kadabak.
Thank you for coming back and updating. What are the next steps? Are there any? Is there funding sources or?
Well, this information will go into a our overall water trail concept plan, and within that, our recommendations. Once that these recommendations would be in that plan, and I know that as Snohomish County Parks, our intent is to adopt that plan in our Parks and Recreation Open Space Plan, so that we and other agencies up and down the river may choose to do the same thing, and it may allow for opportunities for grant funding and things like that because it's part of an overall project.
Okay. And did you say you did the same thing for Sultan?
We did.
Okay. And do you share Sultan's results with us and ours with them?
They're in the packet.
And they're,
yeah.
Okay. Yeah, they're all in the packet.
So that all that information is there. And Sultan will use this information probably similarly to you. I know that Mike had said that as you, in your process, move towards a master plan of Al Borland Park, these recommendations will be brought into that discussion for the master plan.
Okay. So. Thank you.
And I need to let the record show that the time right now is 7:14 p.m. that Councilmember Hanford in her chambers at 7:08 p.m. during the presentation. Good evening, Councilmember Hanford. Next person who has indicated an interest in speaking would be Councilmember Rasmussen. Councilmember Rasmussen.
Thank you. Thank you for coming. I'm just curious if, as we discuss the Cadman Master Plan, if that will have any addition or value to this, or if it's completely separate, or what effects will it have?
Not at all. I mean, very much connected, and that's a great question. We didn't ask the team to specifically look at the cabin site. However, it was a big part of the discussion. People knew it was out there. They looked at it on the aerial maps. The connectivity from the other parks is great. And then you had a discussion with the questions about the...
Absolutely. So the Outdoor Adventure Center is so excited about the Cadman site, feeling that it will provide access that will help guides move people down the river. They see great synergies and promise in that site. We did look at, of course, the connectivity of Cadman, understanding that it was still in process and that you had many things underway with that. So...
Thank you.
Councilmember Scarborough?
When you say enhanced boat ramp to allow kayakers and boats to tie up, are you talking about building a dock as well as the ramp?
No, I think it's just the concept was to have a place where somebody that would come down in a kayak could lock their kayak up so that they would feel safe then to come into town.
I would note, too, that the Department of Fish and Wildlife, I didn't list off all of the experts that were involved, but the Department of Fish and Wildlife was involved in evaluating these things, and their recommendations were supportive of those kinds of improvements.
Thank you. Councilmember Camp?
Thank you. Actually, this might be directed to our city staff. Is the boat launch, is there some issue about development because of Fish and Wildlife or something in terms of ownership?
It's their property.
Okay, so it's really not city property.
So the Little Street boat launch is owned by Fish and Wildlife.
Right.
And so, as you recall, at the design workshop, part of the discussion centered around if there's a way to separate the, you know, having a place for non-motorized boats to launch, that that would be an enhancement in the Monroe area. So Calworthen was looked at, the bank being steep banks, and also the river is a bit, has some dangerous issues with it. As far as that goes with currents, then farther downstream, that's where they're talking about the Cadman site, there's a potential there, and we share the water this plan with our consultants, HPV, and that's been part of the discussion with looking at or creating the master plan for the Cadman site is the opportunity to get things in and out of the river.
Well, I've gotten a lot of interest in development of that. A lot of people are concerned that they'd like to see something better. And I wasn't sure about whether or not you could get the ownership issue straight out, but apparently they do. Again, having gone through the exercise, it was really, really impressive. I know you didn't mention it, but I still love the idea of the creek walk rather than having a river walk.
Yeah.
But having a creek walk down, fronting possible businesses along that area. It is such a beautiful area. It's such a great idea. You didn't mention it. I just had
to. Well, we're trying to stay high level for you tonight. We don't want to pull up your time. But the river walk concept was suggested in this. And again, this was an intensive 2-day time. So some of the sketches are a little bit messy and freehand. But we just locked everybody down for 2 days, brought food and pizza, and had a nice open house at the end where the community was able to come in and weigh in and leave comments and notes. And again, all of your access sites are part of under consideration for this proposed water trail, and all of the land managers and communities along the 84-mile system are participating in this effort to try and manage responsible, positive use, and we just so appreciate all the community input and involvement in that.
Thank you. Thank you both very much. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, the next item that we have on our agenda this evening is comments from citizens. This is a time set aside for members of the audience to speak to the City Council on any issue related to the City of Monroe, except any unusual matter that is subject to public hearing. Is there anybody that would like to come forward and speak this evening? Mr. Walker, please come forward and state your name and address for the record.
Hey guys, my name is Jacob Walker. I'm a Monroe resident at 15877 169th Avenue Southeast. Just a couple of comments that I want to include. I always feel bad when no one stands up for this type of thing. Something that, and I don't know how to provide the recognition that it deserves, I just want to mention to you guys and Mr. Mayor, Ben Swanson is a treasure to the city. I just want to say that I'm running for city council here in Monroe, and for every major issue, especially with city development, I've gone to him, and he's provided incredible insight, totally neutral views that has been so helpful in formulating my thoughts and plans for the city. Didn't know how to say or didn't know where to say that, so just wanted to throw that out there. Was talking to a downtown business right before council, and again, don't know if this is the right forum. They wanted to ask what the city can do to help them. They're, I guess a couple of them have decided that they're going to put on a early Christmas like celebration with caroling on Main Street in the early part of November. The owner of it was the old Junk Sisterhood, wanted me to ask you guys what can be done to help promote it, whether that be, I know there's recognitions of holidays and city events. So I told her that I would ask you guys, and that's all I have.
I recommend that you talk to Mr. Swanson. Normally what I do is have our Ms. Knight work with you on that. I think that Mr. Swanson would be able to talk with you a little bit about that, and it may end up that you're talking to Mr. Farrell.
Okay.
But why don't you go ahead and start with him?
Awesome. Thank you, guys.
Thank you very much for your attention.
Thank you.
Okay, the next item, is there anybody else who would like to speak to the City Council this evening? All right. We're going to go ahead and move on to the consent agenda. Councilmember Rasmussen.
Motion to approve consent agenda.
Second.
Please let the record show that the time right now is 7:22, but Councilmember Davis is in our chambers. Good evening, Councilmember. Councilmember Davis, the motion has just been made by Councilmember Cutaback. I'm sorry, by Councilmember Rasmussen and seconded by Councilmember Cutaback to approve the consent agenda. Do you have any questions, sir? Okay. So we're going to move on to deliberation of the consent agenda. Is there any discussion for the related to the motion? All right, seeing none, we'll go ahead and vote. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Abstentions? Motion passes 6-0. Please let the record show. I'm sorry, I'm going to ask the clerk to please read the two ordinances.
Certainly. Approved through the consent agenda is ordinance number 023-2017, extending for an additional 6-month period interim zoning originally adopted under ordinance number 003-2016 and successively extended under ordinance number 016-2016 and ordinance number 007-2017, formally expressing the City Council's acknowledgement and intent regarding the continued designation of the East Monroe area as limited open space. Following the Growth Management Hearing Board's decision in Central Puget Sound Growth Management Hearing Board, CPSGMHB, case number 14-3-006C, adopting findings, providing for severability, and establishing an effective date. The second ordinance approved through the consent agenda was ordinance number 024-2017, relating to the 2017 annual comprehensive plan amendment cycle, amending and updating the capital facilities and utilities element. The plan implementation chapter, Appendix A, SEPA documentation, Appendix G, capital facilities, public services and utilities, and Appendix H, capital facilities, water, sewer, and stormwater of the 2015-2035 comprehensive plan, adopting the Monroe and Snohomish School District 2016 through 2021 capital facilities plans, providing for severability and establishing an effective date. And the final ordinance approved was ordinance number 025-2017, amending MMC Chapter 20.07 School Impact Mitigation Fee Program, providing for severability and establishing an effective date. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We're going to move on now to Councilmember reports. Councilmember Scarborough.
Okay,
thank you. Councilmember Camp.
What a beautiful day. Perfect day. That's all I have. That's all I have.
Thank you. Councilmember Davis. Okay, thank you. Councilmember Rasmussen.
Good night.
All right. Councilmember Hanford.
Good night. Thanks.
Thank you. Councilmember Hanford. I'm sorry. Councilmember Cutting.
Yes,
sir. Say it twice. Councilmember
Gutter. Ditto. Councilmember Camp comments. I walked around Lake Tahoe and my son was playing soccer tonight, and I tell you, it's just a beautiful fall day with the lake and tons of people are out walking around. It's just a gem of a park.
Thank you.
So, that's it.
Thank you.
That was better than what I did. I actually went on visitations to solid waste sites today. So,
so having gone out to staff, Ms. Hasser, finance update.
So someday you're going to get tired of me coming up here and saying we're doing well.
No.
So of course we're through three quarters now, 75%. And again, our revenues continue to outpace our expenditures in the general fund. So of course that is good news. A lot of that is attributable to one-time revenues, so with our construction sales tax, etc. One of the things that I wanted to point out in the report that I give you is that there are three cost centers within the general fund that look like they would need budget amendments at the end of the year. Jail costs continue to exceed what we had budgeted, so we are keeping a close eye on that, but they're kind of costs a little bit out of our control, as well as the public defender or the indigent counsel costs that go along with our courts, and then the other one is legal costs. Our in-house legal costs did take a big jump during September. We were on track at the end of August, but a lot of bills did come in during September. So now it does look like we're going to trend over budget on that one as well. Ms. Knight is keeping an eye on that one. All the legal costs are accounted for. It's sometimes just what happens when we have a lot of growth going on. So it's not anything that we're overly concerned about, but we just want to make sure we're bringing it to your attention. What's interesting about that, though, is that since we adopt all our funds at a fund level, even though the three cost centers may go over, our bottom line on the general fund is still trending under budget. And if that's going to be the case, then so far it looks like we actually won't need to do a formal budget amendment at the end of the year for 2017. That's always good. One less thing for the end of the year. So, the investment report. Wanted to point that out to you too. This is, I believe, the third time I've included that for you. Again, our investments are starting to do better. Interest rates are picking up slightly on short-term money. The LGIP, which is the local government investment pool, is now over 1%. It has been years since we've seen that, so kind of good news. And then the money that we have in Opus Bank, which is a money market demand account, they actually have their interest tied to the LGIP as a benchmark, and they pay 0.3% above what the LGIP pays. So that's why we split our short-term money between the two. The rest of it then is in longer-term investments that would tie up our money. The LGIP money and the Opus Bank money is same-day liquidity if we were to ever need it if an emergency came up. The reason that I'm going into this in a little bit more detail this time is that because sales taxes continue to come in strong, as well as the real estate excise taxes, our cash on hand was starting to creep up. So we did actually this last week send another $1.5 million to Opus Bank, so that we have that money working for us to make interest on it. We didn't want to buy a longer term investment because we do have a number of bond issues coming due beginning of December. So we want to make sure that the cash is available to do that versus if we bought a longer term investment and then we needed the cash, if big bills come in towards the end of the year and we do anticipate that a little bit, we didn't want to take any penalties for cashing out any investments early.
So we've got a couple lights before you go on to the next one. Councilmember Scarborough.
The increase in legal costs, can you tell us the where and the why?
It's pretty much across the board. I didn't do a deep dive into it, but just looking at the different categories that we break out, we do have a couple of lawsuits hanging out there that have been kind of picking up a little bit of steam as far as work goes with that. And then as far as general counsel, we want to make sure we're doing things right. There's been a lot of ordinances coming before you. We always have legal reviews on those. So, the busier we get, the more we incur in legal costs.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Councilmember Kent.
Thank you. I was just wondering if in the future we could have like an investments 101 course for city government.
I would love to do that.
I've got a rudimentary knowledge of it. I've been here predecessor, but I think there's a lot more in-depth information.
We'd be happy to do that. We'll maybe schedule something on a study session then.
Thank you.
Thank you. Councilmember Cutterback.
How much are we required to have on hand? Do we have we must have bond covenants, or we must have a requirement?
So bond covenants tend to have requirements as to how much cash you have set aside to be able to make your bond payments. It doesn't specifically say you have to have it cash on hand versus having it invested.
Okay.
So there's no real, and I looked at our investment policy. That's normally a policy decision that would be discussed with council. And one of my goals for 18 is to develop or to readdress the investment policy to have some of those things in there. There's no hard or fast rule about how much cash we should have on hand. What we don't want to do is have so much cash on hand that it's not making any money at all, especially given that both the LGIP and the Opus Bank allow same-day liquidity with no penalties, no cost other than the wire transfer fee. So what we try to do is our bank accounts have fees associated with them, and part of the municipal banking account does what it's called an analysis every month, that based on how much money you keep in there, there's earning credits that then get netted against your fees. So we target that we keep enough money in the account that we only want to pay about $300 to $400 a month in fees. We used to pay over $1,000 a month. So we did talk to the bank about eliminating some fees for programs we didn't use. And then what's nice about the analysis statement is it tells me how much we carry the daily balance in order to offset all the fees. Well, to completely offset the fees, we'd want to have like $6 or $7,000 or $6 or $7 million in the account. Well, right now I can earn more in the LGIP than what we're paying on fees. So we kind of take a look. We target around $3 million, $3.5 million to keep in the daily account, and then anything above that we want to sweep into our investment accounts. And then the difference between whether we want to go short term or buy a longer term has to do with, I'll look at my anticipated cash flows over the next year. What capital projects are budgeted, what bond payments we may have due, things like that. So probably a longer answer than you were looking for.
No, I was just curious if we had to have a certain amount of cash on hand, like to pay a payroll, or if there's any requirements. And I mean, there is in business audits if you borrow money, right? But a government, similar to what you were asking for, is some finance or investment 101, like what are the requirements, if there's legal requirements that...
There's no legal requirement to have a certain amount in your daily checking account. The LGIP is actually considered more of a cash account than an investment account, just because of its instant on-demand liquidity. So.
Right, thank you.
Thank you.
So last, you will have found on your dais when you came in an updated page at the end for the budget. I know there's a number of them there, but there's reasons for that. There are two additional pieces that were not in the original budget document, and these are appendices that I usually like to have in the document, but we ran out of time before we gave it to you. One is the FTE counts. And the reason it took me so long to do that is I wanted to go back and make sure I had all the history in there for you, since the budget numbers went back 2013. I wanted the FTE count history to go back that far for you as well. So that's part of the packet you have in front of you. I also like to create an appendix that has all the capital that's being proposed in 2018 in one spot. I mean, a 100-something plus page document is sometimes hard to be able to go right to all the capital in the various pages. So you now have an appendix that will tell you what the capital are, and it has cross-reference numbers on there for what pages within the document you can find for which cost center is paying for it. On top of that, there were some updates, the parks capital improvement plan pages. Fairfield Park entry realignment had been budgeted into 16 also, because we weren't sure whether that would get done in 17, so we wanted to make sure we had the appropriation in 18. It is pretty much completed at this point from what I understand, or if not, will be, so there was no reason to have it budgeted in 18 any longer. So we did correct that. That, however, caused ripple effects in some of the budget overview pages because of the grand totals for everything. So I made sure, I want to make sure everything is consistent. So that's why a number of pages for one simple $16,000 correction. And then we also had a couple of cost centers where we were just able to flush out their goals for next year a little bit more, so we got those in front of you. And then when I was putting together the capital appendix, I realized that some of the write-ups for the cost centers where we said there were no practical considerations did have some small ones, so I corrected those pages as well. So that's what you have in front of you. Again, if you guys got any questions, or if you want to come on in and let me talk your ear off for half an hour about budget, I'm happy to do that. I have all the line items, all the backup, everything. I have what I call my budget Bible now, that is a three-ring binder that's probably this thick with all the backup that goes into the document that you have. So anytime anybody would like to come in, go for it.
Thank you.
Councilor Hanford. Thank you. So I understand the one-tenth of a headcount for the FTEs, or two-tenths. My curiosity is on human resources, how it's going down. Is he lowering his amount of responsibility, or is that getting transferred because he's doing other duties as well?
Second part right there. So it used to be that we charged 100% of his salary in the general fund human resources, but he's also responsible for IT.
Okay.
And so it's appropriate to charge a portion of his time to the IT fund. So that's why you see that change.
Perfect. Thanks.
Anything else?
That's it. All right. Sounds good. Thank you very much, Ms. Hester. So we'll go ahead and do department reports from the staff members that are here this evening. And Mr. Feinberg.
One thing, we've been waiting for the sidewalks along the railroad tracks at 179th and Browns Boulevard, and so that is progressing, albeit slowly. But the Burlington Northern Santa Fe Railroad has approved our contractor to work in the right of way, so we just got that approval last Friday, and so now the contractor is able to schedule with Burlington Northern to have their flaggers on site to make sure that none of our contractors get run over by a train. And so they're working on that process now, and hopefully by the end of the year they'll have started working.
Thank you very much, Mr. Crowder. Mr. Farrell?
No reports.
Okay. Thank you. Mr. Swanson?
Last night we had our open house for the code update with our planning commission, and I think it went well. Brad was there, so we had some engineers, we had some planners, we had some consultants, and answering community questions, and then invited them to stay for the planning commission meeting to provide some testimony. And we did have six actually stay for the planning commission meeting and had some good discussion. They had some good input, and then had great conversations with them afterwards. So we got some valuable input back on that, and we will be having more engagement as we move along the process.
Okay, thank you very much. And Chief Windsor? And our city administrator is not here this evening, but I ask you to please take a look at the extended agenda. And we will have the extended agenda sort of a primer on business and investments that the city of Monroe has. Are there any questions about the agenda? Please note that we do not have a meeting next week. It's a fifth Tuesday. And that you have canceled November 7th, so there will not be a meeting on November 7th. So this agenda is for November 14th. Councilor Hanford?
We didn't officially vote on canceling, so I moved to cancel the...
We did.
We did?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
You sure?
Yes.
Okay.
Okay. Sounds good. Are there any other questions or comments on the agenda or the extended agenda? All right. As for me, just take a look at Monroe this week. See you there. We had a cop last week, and some of the different happenings that are going on around town. And I also was at the Velvet Code meeting last night. It was great seeing a couple dozen people or so here. And Mr. Swanson, thank you and your staff for putting that on. I appreciate that. We do have this evening no need for executive session, but we will be recessing for about 3 or 4 minutes and moving down the tables for our study session this evening. I'll go ahead and announce that since we don't have the computers down there this evening. What this is agenda bill number 17-170. It's discussion of parks master planning. Mr. Farrell will be is identified as a presenter, but I anticipate that it will be our consultants as well that will be presenting. Mr. Farrell, I should, this is a joint park board and city council discussion on direction. I see one park board member here, I think.
Yes.
Okay.
Last Thursday was the October park board meeting, and several park board members indicated that they were not going to be able to attend tonight's meeting. So, Mr. James Yap from the park board is here tonight.
Okay. Thank you, board member Yap, for being here, and certainly understand. So, what we will do, and are you going to be looking for direction this evening from the city council, or how are you going to remedy the joint park discussion, park board and city council discussion, and also direction?
So the materials that are in the park, sorry, the city council's packet were also given to the park board last week.
Okay.
So if they have any comments, also James Yap as well, they can pass that on to me and I can pass it on to our consultants.
Sounds great. Thank you very much. Councilmember Kent.
Thank you. Is there anything time critical with this? No offense, Mr. Yap, I appreciate being here, but if you have more members in the park board, I'd like to hear more of their opinions. I don't know if would it be better, or would you just have to?
I think it would be better to have more voices.
Okay.
Than just one. It would be good to have, so I would have a discussion with the council.
So I think that's along the same lines.
Yeah.
So would it be better to wait until we can have more members, or is there something we need to talk about?
There isn't any action that needs to come out of this. This is more a presentation of the refined concepts. So I agree that it's important for the rest of the park board members also get this information, so I can make sure that minutes and raise myself and pass on the information to the park board members, so we can have a discussion with the consultants that we feel the need to have another joint meeting.
I don't know how other council members feel about it, but I just thought it'd be better if we had more board members. No offense, I'm really like,
you're not, I'm not taking it.
Okay.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, also, another point, thank you. We have an open house that's advertised for November 1st, and we will not be able to have another meeting to start this presentation right before that open house. So, the presentation, it would be good for that to occur tonight still. So.
And you have two consultants here. I understand that one of them may have been on a plane earlier today. Did you fly in from Eastern Washington?
Indeed.
Okay. And you would be able to give a presentation this evening, if nothing else, and receive any input that the council has. Is that correct?
Okay.
Okay. Mr. Farrell, do you have anything further? I do have two lights, and then we will recess down to the tables. Okay. Councilmember, I didn't see who went first. So Councilmember Rasmussen.
I was just going to recommend we continue the discussion at the very least. We should have more members, but consultants here, staff here, let's continue the discussion.
Okay, sounds good. Councilmember Hanford.
I agree.
Okay, we will recess for approximately 2 or 3 minutes, and we will meet down at the tables. And thank you very much.
Ready, Rachel?
I am ready. All right, we're back in session. We're down on the floor for our study session. Remember to speak up or try to have a microphone in front of you.
And
turn
the microphone on.
Turn the microphone on, right. And yes, as Councilor Kant pointed out, if you'd like to talk, go ahead and put your tent name tag up like this, and that'll help me identify you when it's speaking. Any other questions? Or, as Councilmember Kovac did, you can just keep your hand up as long as you like. So, all right. Go ahead.
Okay, well, thank you all. So again, my name is Julia Vaughn with HP Dealer of Architecture. And with me today is Will Grimes with Studio Cascade. We are here to basically come back to you after the last discussion and present some refining concepts of our two parks that we're studying as part of the park master plan. So Lake Tahoe Academy and Site. You had asked a number of questions and some discussions, particularly on Cadman site, about some flooding and the tent and the camping kind of scenarios. So we want to dive into that a little bit more detail here. And then really I'm just proposing to give you the update of what we've changed from the last discussion. The main purpose today is just to give you a preview of what we propose to present at the open house. So this is kind of the red flag chance of saying, oh, no, that was entirely the wrong thing. Don't go down that road. But my assumption is things were pretty well received last time, that I don't expect a whole lot of huge changes. If there is something, we're happy to make some revisions before that open house. And then towards the end of this, we'll talk a little bit more about what we propose to show and kind of what kinds of feedback we're proposing to get at that open house as well.
So I think what we need to do is maybe start off with just a bit of a recap so we can just get collectively more familiar with the process that's run. And also, as Julia was talking about, please don't feel like this is your only chance to give us feedback. What we're looking for is to make sure that we're not stepping on any landmines as we get ready for that November 1st presentation. There will be an opportunity later for more detailed feedback. Do we have you did that.
I'm gonna click her. Although I see a huge glare, but that just might be me. Can you see this okay, or do you want to turn down the light?
I don't have any glare. Does anybody else have glare?
Okay, we're good. All right.
For the fun stuff, we've got big paper things. If it helps though for you, like your presentation.
No, I'm good. I can see here.
When we started this process, it was important for us to understand how the seaside should really fit within the larger context, not just the context for the city, but the context for the region as well. And part of the underlying policy that you have in the comp plan and parks and recreation plan is making sure you have an integrated, accessible trail system that accesses these types of facilities, and then also where we try to find ways to access the river. And it was great to hear the presentation on the river trail work that was done. I think that as they were talking about it, certainly does give us some great opportunities to get to the river and also use these sites as a bridge to landward access. We were talking to community members, particularly about the cabin site, where the emphasis of being able to get to Sky River Park and also to get to the CBD. So connections to Al Borland Park through the river help to facilitate that for sure. We also walked into this process with some schematic visions for these parks based on the comprehensive plan and based on the Parks and Rec plan, and we fine-tuned them during this process. So if you compare what you see on the screen now to what you may recollect from the last time we were together, you'll see some revision. Some of these comments really do reflect the nuance that came out of the conversations at the studio that we had, the open houses, and then definitely the workshops that we had last time with the council and parks board. So you'll see that we're really starting to dial in now on the vision. And I expect these things will continue to evolve as we continue to go through this planning process so that we have a vision that's entirely consistent with the recommendations that come through. We also had a mini poll that we put online, and we just closed that a couple of days ago. This word cloud is just a representation of some of the popular terms that we've heard during that, and you can see, even just looking at the word cloud, that the way people are characterizing these two parks is really falling in line with that type of a visual cabin. Not surprisingly, it has more of that less developed forested and wild context to it, and it ties more of an active, athletic kind of a place. Now, one of the things about this, though, that I really want to learn about is why that's in the shape of Asia. It's a word cloud, but it's a continent. So, kind of amazing.
That's really good ideas.
Yeah. So, anyway, don't need any of this.
I keep arguing it's a brain, but, you know.
Okay, I'm going with Asia. Okay, so, and then when we were here last time, we showed you some of our initial distillations of what we had heard from the community, and trying to understand how some of those vision elements and some of those features that people are really talking about can get translated to some schematic ideas about the master plan for these two facilities. So the thought about Cabin and trying to find ways that we could assertively reach the river using that site and accentuating the asset of the pond in the middle of the site became two fundamental core principles for that particular project. And then when we started looking at Lake Ty, finding ways that we could optimize the use of the southern end of the lake so that we could continue to host multiple uses of this facility without necessarily having to invest too much in getting that done. And then on the north side, making sure that we take advantage of continuity of trail access and finding ways to really find some additional value out of that northern part of the lake, which is now is kind of a random assortment of uses. But what we're seeing also here on the north side is an opportunity for private sector partners to come in where the Lake Ty Trail can actually become an active part of the development opportunity around the north. Okay, so let's talk just a little bit about the Cabin site. I'll introduce it, but then we'll hand it off to Juliet to get into the detailed translation. And boy, have we been busy trying to look at ways that we can take your feedback from the last time we were together and take the master plans to the next level. But we are in search of this purple line. Last time we were together, we were talking about how we were trying to configure a best fit line based on the comments that we had received, and we explored several different alternatives for each of these different park concepts. But we are now seeking that purple best fit line that really does get us the right kind of a plan proposal to suit the comments that we've been receiving.
And what I've got listed here is, we talked in this diagram about all these dots or all the different ideas that we've heard kind of all along to do at each of these different sites. It's very diagrammatic. What I'm starting to do to get to that purple line is translate what everyone seems to agree on. And that doesn't mean that all the other ideas are just never going to be pursued. There's lots of variations within these different kinds of concepts. But these are really what came to the top. That we did definitely, we wanted RV and tent camping, we wanted to explore those opportunities. Again, lots of different ways that could actually be portrayed on the site. That was something that was important to continue to carry forward. Accommodate flooding, ADA access, boardwalks, get to the river, all those different concepts that we talked about before. And so what we've got today in particular, I wanted to talk about was, because I didn't have it last time, we talked a lot about the flooding. In particular, on the Cabin site, it's a very dynamic site. And how are these concepts, as great as they may be, going to actually work with all of the flooding that occurs? And we just haven't quite gotten there yet with the flood analysis. So what I'm showing here is a series of flood diagrams. Let me step back and make sure you can see this. Okay, much better. So this is a two-year flood map. And what's happening here is the lighter the color, the less water on the ground during what's really frankly just kind of the average year flood. The darker the color, the deeper the water. So of course the remaining pond on the Cabin site itself is a much deeper pond. You see the darker blues. You start to see where and how the flood water starts to come into the site, how much of that starts to get saturated. The very lightest color is 0 to 4 foot depth of water. So the example I'd like to show with this is you see where the little restroom and concession stand is in the middle of the ball field, nice and high and dry, by intent. Also the field, right? This is a rotary field, also built up on a hill for a very obvious reason. And you start to see, to really understand what the landforms are doing on the site when you start to look at these diagrams. It becomes even more prevalent as you look at a 10-year event. Now you see the colors starting to really darken. And what it starts to show us is it also starts to show us where and how those floodwaters actually enter into the site and how they leave the site. As we got all said and done as we looked at the dynamics of the floodwaters, the dynamics of the river, and how those motions of rivers occur over time, what really came out of that, just to distill into very simple terms, there's not a lot we can do to prevent flooding. We're not going to prevent flooding. We're not going to make the flooding any less necessarily. The water is going to continue to come in where it currently comes in. You can see how and where it starts to. There's a high point here, so it really comes in and hits the parking lot by the dog park, and then slowly starts to disperse on these couple of key locations. What it did start to tell us, though, is where those pinch points are, that we can start to look at how we can help the flood water then recede more quickly and provide that outlet out so it doesn't sit quite as long, and it makes it a little bit easier to help to come in and restore areas when it's done. So as we get to the 100-year flood event, you really do start to see those connections of exactly where the floodwaters are starting to enter into the site. These are our wetlands, our ponds, our large kind of off-water system becomes much more prevalent with where those waters go, where they naturally want to occur. And those points, that water penetrates and actually comes into the Sky River Park as well. And of course, our two favorite little spots where you're high and dry in these locations. And so that really starts to tell the story, and there's a lot more detail that I don't necessarily get into all of the science behind it, but that starts to really tell the story of how those floodwaters and those dynamics work. What is also important to note on this is this other big high spot right here. There's a little bit of high spots kind of scattered throughout. This is kind of the big one, and I'm going to skip through these again, one because I love maps. But you start to see where it's dry on an average event, and then where it's dry on the 100-year event. That gray spot is our limit of what we can fill. Okay, so this gray spot goes underwater, so the other portion of our site can now be above water. Islands in the ponds, all the rest of this that's already blue, doesn't really matter if we're up or down a little bit, it's still going to be blue. What floods is going to flood. The part where the floods, like the critical element in permitting and getting these types of projects built, is the actual change above that 100-year floodplain. That's where we're most limited. Everything else, we know it's going to get wet, we design it to get wet. There's three ways you can design it to get wet. You can design it to be resilient. Heavy, sturdy, floodwaters are going to come in, the thing is not moving, floodwaters are going to recede, it's still there. It is a more expensive way to build. Not to say that it's going to be permanent, but far easier to maintain as those floodwaters recede. You can also design to be repairable, to basically come in and restore or repair what we know is going to get at least partially damaged. Sedimentation, those types of things. Parking lots are a good example of this. You're not trying to build them all out of the floodplain. You make them solid so they're not gonna start to erode completely, but you know you're gonna come in and you're gonna be scooping them out and cleaning them after the flood event. And then there's the actual just replace, which smaller trails, wood chips, things like that, you just know you're gonna come in with your cleaning parties and your crews and you're gonna be replacing some of those facilities. So as we go forward and think about how these different master plan elements get developed, to me at this level, it really relates to a cost. We wanna make sure we have the appropriate cost to what is going to occur as we move forward into potential development. And we are fine taking some questions and answers, Mr. Mayor, if we want to call into that as we go.
Sure, Councilor, you need to do those three slides again where that increases.
Mm-hmm. So this is the 100-year, there's your 10-year, and there's your 2-year.
And explain, as you said, that our ability to field is only as large as a third of the end of that.
This is kind of our permitting limitation. Not that we can fill in other areas, it's just we can't fill above the floodplain. This is the amount of area that in the future when this project is done can remain outside the floodplain. It does not have to be in this location, but that's the square foot that anything we want out of the floodplain, that's what it has to fit on, is that square foot. Everything else is
going to
get wet.
Mr. Mayor?
Councilor
Kennedy.
Okay. Good. Yeah, I'm with you on that. Because I'm completely confused. So, showing me that little island that looks like it's north of Japan. what you just said is, in effect, you could bring in fill, make another island of the same size, and
this island goes away.
That island has to go away. So we could bring in 1,000 yards of fill and create another little Japan or another little.
Not without significant flood mitigation elsewhere.
Okay.
Right. So if you're going to create a large area that is above like expand this area that is outside the floodplain. You would have to accommodate for that somewhere else that is currently outside the floodplain would have to go below the floodplain.
So we'd have to dig up that small side area thing.
You've got the Chapman site, which isn't ours. You've got the mound, which is probably DOE required separation.
Right.
You got, you start to look at beyond your exactly. So when we're trying to kind of keep a there's always opportunities to mitigate, but when we start to get into any work that starts with N for engine gate, we start to really increase our costs. So what we're trying to do is look at how can we kind of design this. This is the area that I start with to say this is what I think is most important to be outside the floodplain. I want to be able to fit in that square footage.
Okay.
Not in that location, but in that square footage. Everything else, if you start to go up or down, you're starting to expand and become far more limiting in how we design it.
Okay.
Councilmember Rasmussen?
Thank you.
Councilmember Scarborough, do you have another one?
So, to clarify, to get something, we have to give something up.
For cost effectiveness, yes.
How about the gap?
That's where mitigation comes in.
And cost effectiveness, because you spend a lot of money, I'd imagine you just have to offset that.
You have to offset it
somewhere else.
Yeah.
In the
floodplain.
Councilmember Rasmussen.
Do we know how big a square footage or how big that piece?
I don't remember the number offhand, but when we get into showing you the concepts, we actually overlay our concept on top of this map so you can start to see relative size.
Okay.
I do have that information. I just don't have it.
I'm just trying to think.
Mr. Farrell.
Thank you. Some contacts. You got a park over there that has the restrooms that pop above the flood, and then you have the rotary field, but the rest of that park is Scarborough Park. So think about what we have developed in that park. When Juliet was mentioning about resilient, repairable, replace, there's these different categories. So there's also that besides the island and moving it and carrying the square footage.
So my comparison usually is easy to see on these maps is the field, the rotary field itself. Fit in this square footage with a little bit to spare.
I think that's probably, you're probably going to hit it as you go through the slides, but what can be developed or built on that little piece.
Thank you.
Currently the restrooms. And that's
awesome.
Councilmember Cutback.
So the dark blue, because that was dark blue when it was, I think, the year two, and that looks like it's right in the middle over here where you have it's right in there.
Yeah.
So that flood, that's the deepest?
That's the greenest? Yeah, so that's just a very deep pool. So that's where Kahneman, I don't think their pond is quite that big now. There's some time lapse with these different maps. That's the Kahneman's pond on their side of the property.
Right.
It just means it's deeper.
Okay. Is it right there? We pointed out to it again, Bill.
Yeah, that is actually the larger pool area now. The pond is actually.
Okay, I just don't see a pond on there.
Yeah, because we white out the Kahneman site, so we make it clear what's on. So Kahneman has their property remaining. That's that white spot.
Okay.
This red line.
Yeah,
corresponds to that edge of that white spot over there.
Okay. That's what I was trying to do.
So this pond, this kind of lighter pond here, that's our pond.
Which is over there to the right of that, right there.
Yep.
But to the left, that dirt, that's water, and that's just state water.
Yes.
Okay. I just didn't see it on here as water.
Yeah.
You just waited it out, but it is water.
Yes, it is water.
Okay.
So, this is not our site, just to...
The other important element to note when we're talking about the flood is not just how it floods and where it floods in and out, but I mentioned those pinch points. Those pinch points of how, let me go back to my 100 year, of how water kind of comes and leaves into the site, and you start to see those darker areas, they start to, where they're coming through. Here, this starts to become a little bit more prevalent, this connection through here, and how this backwater system works. What is more obvious in this map than you start to see elsewhere is this lighter spot here. So this is that dragway of the Kahneman site. That is probably one of the single largest pinch points in the system for floodwaters leaving. It is essentially an environmental engineer and a civil engineer will tell you is an undersized pipe. for the amount of flood capacity that comes in through here. Not to say that it's not fully legal, but knowing how much water this comes in and knowing the fish habitat and fish passage in an ideal situation, if that were to be modified, you could potentially improve some of the flood, the dynamics of those flood flows leaving the site. There are some smaller pinch points, but those are in our control more because they're in the realm between the two park sites. This is the one that is really kind of part of that private drive that creates a pinch point. So, you know, potential for long-term public-private partnerships if they ever have to upgrade their road. There's some opportunities that we can at least start to think about how to make that flood work better. The last element I want to talk about in this flood that I learned is important is not just how the floodwaters enter and leave the site, but the direction of the flow and how the force behind those waters during an event and where it potentially wants to go, and making sure we don't design another spot for it to then enter into the site. So we don't want to, you know, we're not going to try and block necessarily where it currently enters the site. It's going to come in one way or the other. But what we do want to do is not create, for example, another path that provides a new path of least resistance. So if there's anything, so of course the river is going this way, if there's anything going counter directional to that river flow, that's a potential source of floodwaters entering the site. What's important as we look at those locations then becomes the orientation of our public access as it intersects those rivers, and also the functionality and the friction that those physical elements create. So a set of stairs, metal reinforced, maybe that's maybe one of the resilient items that is in the direction towards that floodwater, would then create friction that the floodwaters would not overpower and create a new avenue. Our boat launch, hand carry boat launch, going in that direction would be a problem. So all of our boat launches, you will notice, similar to what we had assumed in the previous one, was the intuitiveness goes counter to that flow, direction of flow, so that we don't create new scour points or new directions to affect the flooding.
If I can add, that was an important consideration when we were looking at the degree of continuity we could suggest between the pond and the river. And initially some of our thoughts were, you know, are there ways that you can connect it so you could put your boat in here and then paddle out to the river? But because of the hydraulic dynamics, it's something that we just can't necessarily do. And also we have a variance in the height of the two water bodies that would be in
that. We've got a couple of council members who'd like to say a few words or ask questions. Councilmember Kent and Councilmember Scarborough and Councilmember, that's it. Okay. Councilmember Kent.
He answered most of my questions. It's great, but can you give me an indication where that one island is in this picture?
All right, I'm going to jump ahead here, so there's a whole kind of piece in here, but I'm gonna scroll to the end. There we go. So here's our island.
Right, so it doesn't incorporate here.
Here's the mound. So remember, location does not have to stay constant to where that island currently is. But this island square footage fits in this space right up in here. So
technically, you would take that island.
This becomes a flat, depressed area, yeah. Or you know, it's still above water. It's not in the pond, but that basically becomes part of the floodable zone, and we create a high zone of comparable size that would then house our restroom, boat launch, any kind of rock climbing area, and even potentially either some of the parking lot or roundabout kind of other elements. We have a little bit of space to work with.
Okay, Councilor Sarver. Can we go back to the before we tangent on other things?
Yes, I went further than I needed. That was good.
Okay, so Councilor Sarver.
Yeah, the driveway is a cabin built into the property. Are you telling me it was man-made by them? But it was.
Oh, I assume it was. I don't have a lot of history into that. I don't know the details.
With that said, is there the possibility that the environmental people come in and say it's no longer a gravel pit, we want this road removed, and would that removing it have any effect on the water flow that we're talking about trying to work on?
So removing it certainly would. If the cabin site were no longer to be operational, let's say they're done, they don't need this property anymore, what then happens to that property? So if it becomes part of the park, great, we now have control of it, and we can decide whether that's an access we want to maintain or not. If it became another development, that new development would likely be a different type of a use, would kick in a new set of environmental and zoning and all the rest of the regulations, and that driveway would be part of a process that would be susceptible to current zoning, not necessarily just where it was. So it really depends on what that property ends up using for, how much that happens. To me, the way I would think about it is, it's a prime opportunity for a public-private type of a partnership. It's a critical point in the habitat of this offshore channel area. It is undersized potentially for how they use it now. If it becomes a problem for them and they come in with an application to upgrade it or change it in some fashion, that's a great opportunity to look at partnering to actually make it fish passable and do some other kind of flood hydrology improvements at that time, regardless of who ultimately is on that property.
Are there any other questions from council members on this? If this continues the presentation.
The other thing I wanted to touch on was the camping. And so we talked a lot about camping and different types and scales of camping. So we started talking a little bit about open and in a lawn versus forested. And so I didn't have a lot of pictures. We were kind of going for what was in our head. But as we talked about open to a forested type, I understood that, you know, kind of somewhere in between, but a little bit more of that forested experience is what we were looking for. I just wanted to kind of show a little bit of how that then looks on the site. So this is our overall master plan. I'll get into more detail later, but this is the area that we had identified for camping. This is a blow up of that area. So we started to look at how and what you could then actually use to get camping into that space. And what we started to show is, instead of talking about camping being, geez, you want to just pull in a lawn, the discussion was, we really want the lawn to be year-round and usable for people who actually want to, you know, recreate near this pond. Can we just make the camping something that would accommodate RVs or tents or really anybody that ends up wanting to use it? And so that's what we've started to show, is just a camping area, and whether it's RVs or tents or how it gets managed and maintained would all happen in the future. We did shrink it a little. We also got topography, and it is still a little bit on a sloped side, so if it does continue to move forward as it's designed long term, things will really have to shift to respond to topography as well. In a floodplain, there's a lot of discussion as well as, can you camp in a floodplain? What do you do? Is it utilities? Is it hookups? You can. It becomes a paved surface that you have to either be resilient or replace or repair. The main function of that is if there's any electrical hookups. All the electrical can be underwater. Those can all be watertight designed. The actual outlets are just stuck on a pipe higher up out of that floodplain.
Councilmember Hanford.
Thank you. So my recollection of our conversation was that the type of camping that we were imagining was more along the lines of out-of-town sports fans, families coming, finding a place to pull their big RV in and go do sports all weekend and then go back home. Not so much, hey, let's go camping in the woods and go to Monroe. So
it was a lot of discussion. When you kind of look back, there was a lot of it, so maybe it's, for example, like the sporting events was kind of one primary we talked about, and that, you know, if it's a more kind of developed type of a campground, then they pay more for that opportunity. It doesn't preclude the ability for someone to still actually just go park in the parking lot. It's another kind of level of experience. The conversation was also like Boys and Girls Club or Boy Scouts type camps. Your whole family reunion comes out here and you rent the whole thing because it's all about the right size and scale that you can do that easily. If it's the fishing, you know, guys at opening day of fishing and they want to just come camp for 2 or 3 days. You know, how often it's opened, how long it's opened, if it's reserved for anybody or you have to have an event, all of the economy of all of that would have to still really be thought through outside of the master plan process. But what we did want to make sure is, does it fit? Is there a flat enough area for it to function? Can a vehicle get in and out of there? And that we accommodate for what happens if it's in a floodplain and the cost to do it.
Okay, and so then one thing you didn't answer was the sewer part of things. You mentioned
there would be no sewer. Yes, there would be no sewer here. When we looked into some research, you would basically camp here and you go to the fairgrounds. It would be your pump site at the fairgrounds has one.
There would be nowhere to create a dump site on the way out of the park somewhere.
potentially, you know, what do you want to use your upland square footage for?
Sure. He's talking about if you, when you leave the park. So you're leaving the
park.
Yeah. But there's
certainly potentially some opportunity as you sort of, you know, the drive out by the Boys and Girls Club somewhere else along that way might have some opportunity closer. We did not look any further detailed. Just know that it's not terribly feasible by where the camping is.
Sure.
Yeah.
Remember, yeah.
How do you address the increase in impervious surface? How do you address stormwater and water quality?
You would, in this particular case, you have for most of the area that is on this side, the topography is such that you have the dispersion through a natural system that would count for your stormwater. We have very small quantities of impervious in these types of facilities. The roads themselves, if this is paved, this might be something that would get tied into more of a stormwater system. And then we have some lower spots, more in the developed area, that would be rain gardens and other types of green infrastructure. A lot of the trails themselves would be just natural dispersion. The parking lot would be tied in with green infrastructure and then an overflow pipeline and with the rest of the system. Within the floodplain, there's, you know, some costs associated with how that gets built and how those connections happen, but it'd be otherwise like a fairly traditional type system. Well, traditional for nowadays, not traditional for how you built it 10 years ago.
Councilmember Kent?
Thank you. What about Camp Campbell?
Not precluded.
It doesn't sound like it's encouraged with this exam, all appearance properties.
No, we just basically figured out a size of a space. So in the same size as an RV, with basically this, zooming this in, this is like the size of either a truck, like a car and trailer, or an RV. The little square off to the side is about the size of your picnic table. So if you're just a tent camper, you have a smaller vehicle and you have your tent set up kind of on the back side. If you're an RV, you take enough more space. It was just to kind of get a sense of size of what the minimum size for an actual tent spot or camping spot would be, regardless if it's an RV or a tent. So these would be dual purpose.
Okay. I think one thing too earlier on this note, we're segregating the RV and the tents, and so what I was doing though was creating a bigger footprint in the park. So it was appearing, when you look at the earlier concept of it, where this is a tent park, or I mean a camping park. It's just looks like the primary purpose of the park is camping, and I don't believe that it's the primary purpose of the park. And so by combining them, so it can be used for either or, reduced the footprint, and so it doesn't have that appearance.
But that was also kind of pushed a little bit further back. So if it does happen, it's got its appropriate space. If not, it's trails and it's other types of things in the forest. And yeah, also shown in a way that you could do smaller pieces of it at a time. You don't necessarily have to do the whole thing at once.
People walking around the path, around the pond too, you wouldn't be staring at campgrounds.
Yeah.
So it'd be a bit, like you said, off to the side. And everything, I mean, it would have to be completely paved. That's the only way this would work with the vehicle traffic would be there.
Yeah, the roadway areas would definitely have to be paved. As you get into actual spots themselves, there's a little bit more flexibility.
Councilmember Rasmussen.
Thank you. So tent camping then, I mean, obviously with RVs you have the luxury generally of restroom within your camping, within your RV, but tent camping you don't have that. So because this would still be in the flood area, would we be able to have the public restrooms for the tent campers in this area, or what kind of dynamic does that throw in there?
So when we get to those other diagrams where we show the floodplain on top of it, let's come back to that, and I can kind of show you some options.
Okay.
The short answer is we've got a little bit of room to work with. So it's a matter of what you want to bring out.
What's the reason or the underlying reason for taking the high ground and replace it with some of that?
The main reason for doing that is our high ground is off on the far side of the pond, so bringing utilities, infrastructure, pavement across through to that spot is simply more expensive, and it brings vehicles further into the site. Everything we heard from an open house and our pop-up, we asked a lot of specific questions about, you know, how far do you really want to bring cars into the site? Even, you know, examples of bringing them all the way down here for a turnaround in the drop-off area. And virtually all of the conversations we had was wanting to keep our cars as far up into this northern part as we could. So the reason for flipping where that high spot is to be able to consolidate from an efficiency of just development costs closer to where the existing Sky River Park is, utilities, driveways, access, is just simpler to put in place there and keep them further away from the rest of the site.
If the flood water goes up there, it doesn't make any difference whether it's on this side or that side.
Exactly. But it's cheaper to build on this side because it's closer. So by moving the high point over to this side, we're able to build where it's more cost effective to build that infrastructure. If we were to bring it all to where the existing high point is, you're just bringing all that infrastructure a little further into the site. I have a detailed blog that might be more easily to explain.
Okay, may I just a follow up? I missed something, I think, if I heard you correctly, the camping area that you're illustrating here, is that the area that you're raising?
No.
No, you're raising the other side.
I would propose that we raise the location for the restroom concessions, any kind of a play structure or climbing type wall, more of the active component.
So this is gonna flood.
This is gonna flood.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Yes, and it floods in that 0 to 4 range.
Okay.
Because it is actually naturally one of the higher spots. So even in the 100-year floodplain, it's flooding in more of that 0 to 4 range.
Okay. Any other questions on this slide? Okay, please continue.
Okay. All right, back to the rest of the site. So I didn't want to go through all the detail of what's shown here, but a couple of things that I did want to just talk about that we've changed since the last time we've talked. So one of the main areas was really consolidating the tent and the camping back into this spot. One of the other things we've done is really looked at what I call kind of the right fit, the scaling of the different facilities. So when we're just pen and paper, we tend to get pretty grandiose with those lines. The thicker the line, all of a sudden we're, you know, designing a trail that's 30 feet wide. So a lot of these really tinier paths that you see in this orangish color are just kind of scaled. One of the important considerations we did think about when we talked with staff about this is that because this is a site that we have a little bit higher concerns about security and safety for pedestrians using the site, they wanted to be able to really get a small vehicle down the vast majority of these trails. So most of the trails we're showing here are like about 8 feet wide, so a vehicle could physically get down them. It doesn't mean it's paved, but that they have a clear spot that they could drive to truly get some of the maintenance into those different areas. And that's the case for all of the trails that are not boardwalks. They're not expected to drive on the boardwalks themselves.
So they're 8 feet wide. I'm sorry.
So even the soft surface trails would be more like 8 feet wide. And so we're accounting for from a budgeting standpoint, you know, is it 6 feet of surface and a couple feet of gravel shoulder? Is it, you know, more of a 6 foot surface and some mulch? It doesn't necessarily have to all look paved, but they need a clear zone that they can get that small vehicle through in order to maintain it and to be able to respond to concerns that pedestrians might have. So the other things we did, just to point out in particular because of the presentation you had earlier, we did actually extend the trail system, the connectivity into Sky River Park follows what the previous concepts were shown from the water trails concept. So the connections that they had up here are shown, the connections that they have over to Alboran and the boat launch are shown, and the connectivity both into the upland of our site as well as kind of along the river. So that was coordinated pretty closely with that river trails map, as well as bringing in the hand-carried boat launch separate from the motorized boat launch, which was one of the key recommendations out of that water trails report as well. So those occurred here, and again, that angle is very important. The one spot we angle the opposite direction is where we get a proposed stairway in order to get, again, anytime I get somebody down to a beach for safety and security, I want more than one way to get out of that beach. And so it's important to have a couple of spots that they can do that in along that riverfront. We talked a lot about reshaping the pond last time around. I'm still showing some of the islands, but I narrowed really how much reshaping we need to do, more for cost purposes. And the one other major change that we did here is we're showing this trail as a much wider trail, and that's that centennial trail that at least keeps open the opportunity to bring a true paved centennial trail through our park site and then connecting it back up this direction and then also up into the bridge. I forget the name of the bridge that comes through there.
Lewis Street.
Thank you. I think that's about it on this one. I did bring, we'll come back to the master plan, but it is tough to see, so I zoomed in on a little bit, so you can start to see this is that restroom in more of a concessions area. So it is not that far away, but it would be a bit of a hike from a campground. This would be the one that they would use. We're showing kind of a space for storage, kayak canoe storage, paddle boat storage, whether it's individuals that portage. So she talked about the ability to bring your kayak out of the river and actually have a place to store it. This is where it would go. I think one of the things in listening to her talk, Bill and I were chatting that we might want to bring some portion of that down closer to the portage spot to make it more convenient to store your boat and not have to haul it all the way up here. So those are some things we might still think about. A little outdoor area for climbing, zip line, something, and not just kids because there is a playground, but maybe more of that adventure sport that Monroe is kind of known for, and we can bring some of that into this park as the context we have. Parking for about 50 stalls, and then some circulation. We did this specifically so that you could actually close off, block off the camping and not have any vehicles come across beyond that. So the circulation is done so that if it never happens or if it does happen and you really want to control when it's open, you have lots of flexibility to do that in the long run. And then lots of trail connections to other places around the site. A couple of photos of what some of these things look like as we blow it. Just to keep, I like to show photos of scale and examples. So, you know, this is kind of a hand-carried boat launch. That's about the scale we're thinking of. It's not massive. It's not heavily structured. It's intended to feel very real and kind of small, small scale. Could be paddle boats. It could be kayaks and canoes. It can kind of, it's the piddle around the lake kind of thing.
I still like the hippo concept.
Yeah. and it starts to show some edge conditions of what that pond could look like. And then again, when we say it's not a playground, it's really intended for kind of all ages, more adventure type activities. examples of what the boardwalks and some of those overlooks look like. And again, that lake edge, you know, the main lake edge would actually have a paved circulation run around the pond itself. And then secondary paths leading off of that could be crushed rock or other types of surfacing. And so this is overlaid into that two-year site, so you can start to see, you know, this is actually fairly dry most of the time, so this is something we could actually do a little bit of filling to keep this dry most of the time. If this is wet most of the time, there's a little horse trading we can do there, but really the area that we're more concerned about showing is how this was reflected in the 100-year floodplain. So this square footage here, and this is what we're currently still refining these concepts, but this square footage here basically fits this square footage for our boat launch, our restroom, whatever this becomes, and this portion of the parking lot would fit within that above the 100-year floodplain. If camping is absolutely important, and we definitely want a restroom and to totally build that as part of a campground, if you allow this to flood, you've got some space to work with to do some other facilities over in the camping area. So when I talk about horse trading, there's a little bit of that that could certainly happen, and that would likely happen at the point where these start to get developed into more detail. But we would like to just, you know, make sure we're in the realm of possibility so we know what we're proposing is feasible.
Councilmember Kent.
Thank you. I just want to make sure I'm clear about the restroom. So we've got it, you had it laid out because you erased the height of the land.
Mm-hmm.
That's the reason why, so you could have a permanent structure there for a real restroom instead of porta potties and everything.
Yes.
But what's the scale from the furthest point in the camping? I'm assuming there's a tent all the way over to the left.
Yeah, so from this furthest point to this restroom?
Right.
Okay, so that's basically from the playground to the existing restroom in Sky River Park.
Okay.
A little bit further, but not by much.
Okay.
Like a couple hundred feet, I think, if I was to look at what it comes out to.
Would you use the tent?
Yeah, go ahead.
that that could easily be remedied by having some pork bodies there seasonally near the campground, I'm sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it'd be fully accessible for a vehicle and a truck to get in there.
Okay. No, that's fine. I want to make sure that I have the scale down.
Yeah.
Picturing a...
here's your existing playground, here's the existing restroom, so you're getting, an extra 100 feet beyond that for the farthest one.
Okay, we deal with that. Thank you.
When you're talking about the restroom there, are you talking about running water, running sewer, or are you just talking about...
Nope, I'm talking full-on restroom. Full-on. Running water, running sewer. Yeah, if it's going to be kind of functional concessions, if it's going to have flexibility in the future for lots of different types of uses, we're estimating and assuming it's an out-of-the-floodplain, fully functioning little building.
Okay. And so part of what's taking away from some of the fill is the parking lot. So one of the things that we could do, that's what you said, you could lower the parking lot right there and just understand that that part might flood, but then you're trading something over in that camping area.
We were also, the other thing we've got in here is this kind of mound, this idea of being able to really sit on the mound and view everything. It's like the mini kite mounds, the little hangout sort of spot. This would have to... like not the whole size because some of it would flood, but this upper portion takes out of this spot as well. So if this is stays high and dry, this either goes away or becomes more of a little dollop than a mound.
Sounds good. Thank you. Anybody else? Please continue.
Okay. So that was just any other questions. I think if we're ready to move on to Lake High. All right, same thing from before. We sort of have our UR here, what we're trying to do. Some of the things we heard, shoreline and improve that shoreline for both habitat and pedestrians was equally important. The other thing I think we talked a lot about was accommodating existing and future community events. Those are some of the areas I'm going to focus on. I think a lot of the rest of these we talked about it quite a bit at length at the last time we talked about it, the last time we met. All right, focusing in on the south end. Not a whole lot has changed drastically in here. Some of the biggest changes I think we really did was to continue to kind of figure out and refine how and where we could get the expanded parking. I have shown kind of a few stalls heading in this direction, so we looked at the codes and the requirements and kind of laid out what that parking is. It comes out to about another, anywhere from like about 30 to another 50 stalls, depending on, there's a little bit of fudge factor in this edge condition here still.
Can you show us where that's going to be?
Yeah.
Over here, maybe.
I'm going to draw in, can I borrow your pen? I'll draw in the, I'll do blue. So, existing parking comes right along this edge and goes into this spot. That's the limit of existing parking. So this whole northern bay is all new parking.
And that goes right up to the
eastern bay.
Walking path, I think.
Thank you, eastern bay. The walking path is relocated in order to make room for that parking. So that walking path gets pushed up. There's about 6 feet between the curb and the edge of the walking path, then a 12-foot walking path, and then your parking right there.
Okay.
So that is maximizing really where that parking could occur, leaving a little bit of extra room, for a stall here or two, but really this is our biggest opportunity area. The other thing we are showing is what I'm labeling, it's really just a label of on-street parking, purely on the west side of Byron Boulevard, not proposing it on the east side, and that would basically, where the limits occur and how far you take it is optional, but that would be taking an existing travel lane, because again, Fireland Boulevard is overbuilt for how it's currently used. The capacity does not need all four lanes. We could take the westernmost lane and turn that into on-street parking. The nice thing about doing something like that is it can be signed, it can be timed only, so it could only occur on weekends, it could only occur during special events. It gives a little flexibility and the potential to ease into this in certain areas as a consideration for additional parking.
One thing that is missing from here, I can say I don't see it, is the new Veterans Memorial. the veterans, so am I just missing it? I don't see a label for it.
So the existing one sits over here. How far is it moving forward? I think I don't have it moved.
No, the veterans memorial is right around here.
No, so it didn't change. So, okay, I know which one. It's the flagpole right across from the restroom. I don't have it labeled. I'll add the label.
Yeah.
It's existing. It sits right here, and we did move it.
Yeah. The, one of the things that, I would like to have that identified, and if there's a way to make that a little bit more inviting, a little bit more prominent, I think that that would be a real positive. Right now, it's a wonderful addition to Lakeside Park. It's adjacent to a parking travel aisle right now, and it would just be nice to be able to make that a little bit more integrated.
Yeah, so not to redo the memorial, but to make the space around it a little bit more accessible and integrated.
More, yeah. Councilmember Scarborough.
Are you talking about that parking spot on both sides?
No, I'm not talking parking at all. I'm talking there's the Veterans Memorial there, and if you recall, there's a raised curb.
Would you propose putting parking spots on both sides of that, like between where the pavement is now and the walkway, and having the parking there?
So potentially, if that memorial were not there, you could add parking along this route. You would get maybe another 8 stalls, potentially, if that memorial were not there. We did not show that.
I'm not proposing moving the memorial. I was just talking about putting parking spots on both sides, if there's room.
You could add a few.
Yeah. Okay.
The cost for a couple of parking stalls here and there, you could.
Okay.
It's more expensive to build a couple than your efficiency, and just if you really need more parking, building a parking lot.
Councilmember Hanford and then Board Member Yap.
I like your idea about just kind of getting that on the map, number one, and then thinking about how to slightly change the landscape around it. Not a parking spot, just make it like,
make it feel like it's part of the park.
This is meant to be here from day one. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think there's the ability, and I know this is micro scale compared to everything here, but it's extremely meaningful to maybe even lower the grade a little bit because it's sloped right there, make it something where people can gather a little bit more, maybe some nice landscaping or something around it.
I think that makes a lot of sense.
Some sort of vertical relief so that you're not right next to the, you don't feel like right next to the travel lane. That's all.
Okay.
Thank you. Anything further, Councilmember Hanford?
No.
Councilmember Scarborough?
No, Mr. Yap was
great. I'm sorry, Board Member Yap.
Yeah. Just a suggestion on that vehicle driveway going north south where the memorial is, is to have a different kind of pavement that identifies that section.
That actually would be kind of nice. The other thing along those lines we started to look at is, does this go, if you ever build this, this could potentially go away and actually be more of a drop-off, which would make this connection feel that much more generous. So that's actually something we might think about bringing back again.
What we miss there right now is sort of a gathering spot.
Yeah.
There's also sort of missing there a little bit of seclusion if you want to reflect.
Yeah. And maybe accessibility is there.
Yeah, I think you can actually, potentially, Councilor Scarborough, so.
Just a comment on the parking on the far more. That sounds really kind of scary. I'm trying to figure out how to do that. Just from my immediate reaction was, I think I'd have to see a real good picture of that before I go. This is
okay.
Will you?
Are we uncomfortable starting in a public meeting?
Yes. I'm not comfortable. I don't know how council feels. I'm not comfortable. I think we need to keep the four lanes there. It may be overbuilt for traffic and transportation standards today. I know that a lot of people use it, and I don't think that, unless there are council members here that would want to consider parking. Councilmember Cutter?
Well, I think having it accessible, or what you talked about, because I know that people are very frustrated when there's a big event and there's no parking, and then the neighborhood is frustrated because people go into the neighborhood and park. So
we try an event park. So when you have these events, you shut down a portion of this road. we could basically kind of make a notation of parking on street during events when it is shut down.
Yeah, when you mentioned that, I think just having that option of, hey, we're considering that, not permanently.
You mean like coding it off?
What?
You mean like coding it off?
Or however we do it, where it's, you know, it's like on the trestle, you only can go on the shoulder during certain times, right? I mean, it'd be like community events are a weekend. That lane then becomes a park lane. And as Councilmember Dave said, parallel parking. Which is a whole other issue. But I think looking at that as an option, the public will let us know if it's completely off the table.
Okay. Councilmember Kim?
Thank you. I think the public's already let us know. Every time we close down Lake Tahoe or Providence Boulevard, we get innumerable complaints. Just the thought of shutting down one of the lanes, I think, would cause a rebellion. So I'm extremely hesitant. I like the idea that if you're having an event, you're closing down like the two lanes, as we've done on occasion, have two lanes for the short term, using that for parking. That would be a one-off.
I think for the open house, if it's a concern, I think we can label it as parking during events or something, just so people get the idea without calling quite as much attention to it.
Actually, yeah. I think that would be a good idea for your open house, is to mark that. I would like to see what the results are. Now, point it out to people.
And yeah. And we can just talk about it during the event and ask them. Yeah. And that way it's a little less feel like a decision has been made.
Right, thank you.
I'm just going to do a quick time check. It's almost 9 o'clock, and I have some other details to show.
I just want to make a comment as to there is not a parking just west of the school. So that can be used as...
This arrow is to improve pedestrian connection to this parking, which is during events and overflow as well.
Perfect. Councilmember Rasmussen.
Yeah, in regards to parking in private, me personally, not my favorite, but I think I'm not afraid of having a discussion from the public either, as long as they understand it is just a concept, it is just an idea. It's not. This is our only choice.
Yeah.
The more you described it, it reminds me of the road around Green Lake in Seattle. And kind of the same thing. There's two lanes, or actually four lanes, and certain times of the day, the far right-hand lane is used for residential parking.
Yeah.
So. Kind of a similar concept. Mm-hmm. So
we'll find out more at the open house then.
Yeah, I don't mind or fear hearing back from the public on that.
Please continue.
Okay. The other element that we did look at was how the circulation occurs, and so we wanted to get far enough in to really just diagram and make sure that how the truck with the portable stage enters, leaves, turns around is in a much better condition in the future than what they currently have to do now. So this is just really that proof of showing the turning movement to make it easy. What it does mean is, instead of one option was we looked at is having them come all the way out and punching through here to be able to leave during those few times they bring the stage in and out. But what we really wanted to see is, what does it look like if we allow those movements to happen just within our site and make it much more efficient to do that. It does mean a fair amount of paved area around this particular side of the park, but this is also where we were proposing to kind of expand with the ADA access to the beach and have a larger dock area, so having some extra pavement in that zone would actually potentially fit well with an expanded use. So that's a little bit of a different configuration, but the concept remained very much the same. I did want to show some photo examples again just to see the scale. We've talked about the entry fountain. I did hear some comments about yes fountain, no fountain, put fountain somewhere else. It's a little bit mixed in the public so far as well, so I think it's important to continue to show it. We've heard a lot of support for it, particularly from the families, a little less so from, you know, people who are really just walkers, so I think it'll be interesting to see how that's played out at the open house. But this is, when we say fountain, this is the kind of thing we're thinking. We're not thinking grandiose ornamental fountain, something you could actually play in and turn off when you needed to. And that picnic plaza is a term not a lot of people are familiar with. It's really just the idea of some shelter and a consolidated place to just gather, particularly during those events. You do have the other new addition we had is, so this is the concession existing. We're pulling some of those to expand the canopy for people who are waiting around there. You have a pretty strong grade change, so we wanted to add in some cost to actually ease that grade change. The idea of these kind of oversized steps that become the informal seating as well. And then some comments last time on what does that shoreline beach access look like for ADA. And just to kind of recognize that we do want to continue to keep that in the plan.
Nice.
The other element we talked about, trying to explain, is really what does that shoreline access look like? What is it if it's what we call fishing pods? You know, they're kind of larger structures where we have some more major kind of consolidated elements, and some of them are just super tiny little spots that you can stick your foot out and just kind of pop in a pole. So these are the different scales. They aren't all intended to be this kind of grandiose, but just to have lots of smaller places to kind of get your feet wet as well, both natural and a bit more structured. North End stayed relatively the same. The biggest change we made here was we had this kind of grandiose expanded peninsula while building out to that extent, and then we had to take shoreline away from somewhere else to maintain the same storage capacity as a stormwater structure. And so we did actually got a little bit more realistic in where the lake might come, it'd be expanded a little to allow for some added vegetation and where we pull it away. So more just fitting the scale of those things in place. And that's it.
All right.
I do have one more slide I want to talk about. We do have some phasing, but while Bill is still here, I wanted to go into a little bit of the next open house before he has to leave.
So I just have one question.
Yeah, Councilor Kovac.
So the pathway around the lake, because we talked about that, so up above, is it on its current sidewalk, or have we moved it closer to the lake?
This is the current sidewalk that would stay. We've pulled off of that these kinds of secondary routes along here for our fishing pods.
Okay.
When it comes closer to the main heart of the park, we then pull it away and get a new route that kind of comes this way. It's the shortcut to stay close to the water instead of coming around the skate park. And on the north end, it is floating or fixed pier to come through the water here so that you don't have to go out to Fry Line and down.
Okay, so I was just trying to
I think at one point we have shown sort of more secondary trails, but again, the cost, it's not wide enough to sort of do multiple trails in most of the case, so just keeping it with what currently works. Okay.
Councilmember Hanford, Councilmember Rasmussen.
Thanks. So, thank you for clarifying that. But so you're saying that they could still go down the path as it exists today if they don't want to go down this way.
Yeah.
Okay, same with over there. Okay. And then one other thing you talked about was when they're doing the wakeboard contest.
Yeah.
There was going to be something to see really well.
Yeah.
That's it.
This is it. Okay. So we have a series of piers themselves that are the fishing piers, kind of the main fishing dock, basically, when they're done an event. And then we also use that hillside to actually, so the fishing docks would be further down lower, and then the hillside around them would be that kind of seating, just informal, sort of concrete in the lawn type seating.
Great. And then this.
The bridge connecting the peninsula and north, yes.
Right.
That is still in place. We call it the View Bridge. Okay. As well as highlighting the outlet, there's kind of an interesting little enhancement that a community group or somebody did in that zone. So we wanted to actually enhance that a little bit as well.
Okay, and then just to go back to the parking. So when people can't, let's say that where there's a huge event, people can park at the county park,
at Fairfield, and also the school.
Fairfield and the school, and then just
and then
walk.
So they currently can still walk, and what we're proposing is to actually make that a much more obvious, generous walk.
Sure.
You would not be able to drive directly from here. You would still have to come out and in. The one other change we did make is this is currently a dead end, which seemed kind of silly. So since we were redoing parking anyways, we sort of fixed that in the bid as well.
Okay, Councilmember Rasmussen, and then Councilmember Cotabat,
yeah,
and then Councilmember Scarborough. Councilmember Scarborough Rasmussen.
Thank you. So the boardwalk that was on the west side of the lake, parallel to the Frylands, has that design changed? Because it seemed like last time there was
a
walkway.
West side.
Yeah. No, the east side, yeah, sorry.
East side?
Yeah.
Yeah, so the...
Because it seemed like last time, if I remember right, that boardwalk continued along that edge and giving people the feeling that, that you weren't walking right on Frylands Boulevard, so you had more of a picturesque walk, at least that's the impression I took from the last meeting, which is different than what you're telling me.
Yeah, this, I think before we had that, we kind of relocated that path quite a bit. Here, we did make that change based on some comments I heard, which maybe I didn't hear quite right. We put that path back to more or less where it was existing and just pulled some secondary paths off of it.
I guess for what it's worth, I really liked having that path off of Frylands.
For the honor. Okay.
For how long?
What's that?
For how long? For the entire length of the...
Or for the entire distance, yeah. I mean, just given park goers that more natural or nature walk, they're walking around the lake without being on the sidewalk of a busy street. And there are a lot of ideas and discussions that came out of that as well. So
okay, I just kind of misnoted a few things, but that's kind of consistent amongst everybody.
That's just my personal take on it from last time. So,
would you look for a second?
Please.
I thought that this was kind of what we're talking about, because this is right here is where there is no more buffer on Frylands Boulevard and the trail. That's where it joins. This all has a buffer. It's just from here down, it doesn't have a buffer. So I thought that was actually pretty close.
The last time we showed, it was, the previous concepts were shown much more generous and a little bit more like a windy, loopy kind of path. The existing path that's out there, there's a buffer. It's like 6 to 8, 10 feet-ish or so. Versus something that is kind of really more of a windy experience,
sure.
Kind of shifting down and up that hill more. So you're thinking more windy kind of parkway.
Not necessarily windy, just not on...
Yeah, okay.
So I think that gets into a little bit of what we discussed last week, the benefit of having like trees to help provide some shelter during the summertime and a little bit of a feeling of windbreak during the wintertime, and having that on both sides of the trail.
And that's actually a good point that I don't think we're currently showing the trees on the other side, but that might actually, without moving the entire trail, that might be a way to get that experience. Without necessarily having the cost of moving the whole trail.
Okay. Anything for Councilmember Rasmussen?
Thank you.
Rasmussen, Councilmember Cutback.
That's what I was going to say. Yeah, having a buffer between, you know, trees on the other side, just having a clear access or feel closer to the lake. I mean, sometimes I walk just the back side, the west side, back and forth, because I don't want to be on the street. My other question, though, was about that view bridge. Because if I remember, with events in wakeboarding park, they go up north and they turn around that bridge.
That's actually a high one. That's why we call it a bridge instead of a boardwalk.
Okay, so it has to be a high and you planned for
the
that.
The smaller boats would go, like the you know, a lower boat would go in, would be able to go underneath
it.
Okay, which means given our width, it might not be an accessible bridge. So there's kind of a balance at some point. Someone would have to figure out exactly how high does it need to be,
right,
and need to turn around in that area versus having it accessible.
Right, okay.
Okay. Councilor Sarver, when you talk about the parking down the soccer field, those parking places or living on what we have, and is there access behind the school to Fairfield or those parking spots?
Whether they have to walk out to bike that up.
No, there is a way to kind of sneak through there now, but it's not obvious. We would improve it. So we are accounting for and showing improving that access so it's wider, it's more generous. It clearly is an opening. We are not showing improvement to the parking itself. Since it's outside kind of our purview of the scope here, we were just leaving it. What I do think we should show is we should outline that parking though so that we can clearly identify that it's there.
I did it tonight.
Yeah.
Board member, yeah, is next. Councilor, sorry. Okay. Board member, yeah.
The question about accessibility, you were talking about the bridge may not be, and it's the boardwalk on the south and west side of that restaurant building connecting to the sidewalk, that section.
Yeah.
Is so that enough grade to?
This would have to be a ramp, and if it's not this, then you would just rotate it to the point where it would be accessible. We haven't done any kind of grading studies to know what exactly it would have to be. The idea is you would shift the trail so you did not have to do ramp structure. So it might elongate it a little bit more that way. This way it stays lower, and by the time you hit over here, this is a much easier grade change to work with. There's still some grade change that has to happen here in order to get up and down excessively, but this is much more feasible. This, we've got room to grow if we needed to. But this piece may or may not be accessible if access needs to happen underneath it. And that, I don't know that we'll necessarily get to a point of figuring out. We're just accounting for a raised bridge structure in our estimate to allow some flexibility.
Any other questions?
So for the whole circulation of the trail, distance and width for events, is we want to still have the ability, as Councilmember Hanford mentioned, to go to the existing trail.
Right.
So we're not
proposing that. Because of what we're taking away. Our graphic kind of looks like it's not there anymore. We'll fix that for something else.
Thank you. I was just thinking the same thing, connecting those two right there.
Yeah, we'll show that connection.
All right. Anything further on this one?
I'd like to talk a little bit about the open house, and then Bill will probably take off to catch his plane back, and then I have a little bit of phasing that I just want to touch on, because we do want to show phasing to the community, so I want to make sure you guys at least get your eyes on that before the open house.
November 1st, tell all your friends, everybody you know, to come and join us at the Boys and Girls Club. What we're going to do is pretty much a lot of what we've done now, where we're going to ask the public to vet the overall concept, make sure that it's tracking with what they've been saying so far, and then we're going to ask them to take a look at individual features and let us know if they think that we're really hitting the mark there too. So that's one of the first things we're going to be asking them to do, and then we're going to actually get into some of the phasing conversation. You'll be able to describe where we're thinking now. We might need to phase various improvements, and we're going to ask them to tell us if they believe it's the most important first moves on the site, and so we can, you know, gauge a little bit of what they think is most urgent, most important, and then, you know, their overall interest in actually pursuing this and getting this done. So we're hoping to have a couple of presentations during the course of the open house, condensing this into maybe a 10 or 15 minute presentation, do the same presentation twice, so early on and then in the middle, and then have facilitated stations from each park and talk to us about what they're seeing.
I got the date and place most of the time.
6 to 8, correct?
Yes.
November 1, Boys and Girls Club, 6 to 8 p.m.
There will also be concurrent and online component to the open house, so people can come in person and they can also see the graphics online and set up like kind of a step-by-step survey online that will ask some very similar questions.
Now we're hoping, even though we have the online option, we're hoping people are there so we can engage in conversation, but for those who can't make it, we still have the same questions available for them to fill out as well. And when we were talking earlier, we were saying that there's going to be another opportunity for the park board and the council to weigh in, and it would intervene somewhere around in this space here. So as we're finalizing the master plan, we'll have a chance to see where we're going to make sure that we're having the direction. And then, of course, we've got the overall formal adoption approval process to follow after that.
We are not proposing to share cost estimates with the public at this time. We really want them to get a sense of what's the highest priorities for them. The next meeting we have with you folks, we will have those cost estimates available and have that
too far facing it up, what are we willing to live without if our costs are just much higher than what we're comfortable trying to fund? And also some potential conversations on how we fund, because these are a lot of different concepts and they're going to be expensive.
Okay, sounds good. Anything further?
I do have a couple other things, and Bill, I know if you need to take off, you're welcome to. I wanted to just talk phasing. What we've done for phasing for both of the different sites is we've created a series of phases of what we thought accounted for what was the heart of the improvement, and then what made the most sense based on what we've heard so far. So for Cabin, it is create the core, and that's this kind of central area of the highest activity. It's our restroom, it's our parking. If you're going to open this up, you want to be able to have people come into it, park it, see where they're going to go, and really feel comfortable and safe coming into the site. So this core area would happen first. We actually have second as reach the river, so that connects that core area down to our waterfront and our portage actually to the river itself. Three is walk the riverfront. It connects from this river out to basically, and it's not quite shown, but it connects out to the existing boat launch. It also includes the actual parked hand carry boat launch improvements, and then connecting back into both of the two parks that way. One, two, and three are all fairly interchangeable. It makes sense to kind of bring people in first, but you could also easily create some trails first, and then, you know, by keeping it in this portion of the site for safety, security, visibility made a lot of sense. So one, two, and three could kind of all happen together or could kind of be reorganized quite a bit. Four and five could also be flipped pretty easily, I think, four, five, and seven. So four is to explore the forest. It gets kind of the heart of the rest of the trails along the riverfront itself. Five is our camping area. Six is the connectivity and kind of sculpting of the pond itself and connecting the rest of the loop around. And then seven is more the everything else. Does that generally make sense? Anything seem completely out of whack?
And we were trying also to organize the phasing so that we're bringing online earlier the things that the community is indicating is most important to them.
Yeah. All right, so then for Lake Tide, again, we're kind of at the heart of the park first. So we call this one Energize. Energize the park because it's already there, but we're kind of revamping it. We're making it a lot easier. We're getting more accessibility into those spots. Getting the picnic plaza, making those spaces kind of a little bit of a facelift almost for flexibility and functionality. Two, out on the water, so that's the actual boat launch improvements itself, adding the dock, adding accessibility down to the dock, getting that shortcut connection we talked about so that you didn't have to necessarily come along the river, so that includes a couple of those first two fishing pods and some shelters and improvements around the skate park area. Three is expand capacity. So once you're building this out to have more capacity and more use and more functionality, the parking made a whole lot of sense to come as well. Again, one, two, and three, fully interchangeable depending on funding and timing of different types of facilities. They're very independently functional phases. Four and five are just the east and the west ends respectively. So it includes basically whether it's a fishing pod or access improvements, it includes gravel paths, it includes more the planting, the softening of those streetscape edges, and then four in of itself also includes that second overlook kind of viewing area. And then six is the peninsula and the bridge across, and then seven is kind of that north connection. So seven is basically the entire north connection through to the existing edge over here, whereas six is just the bridge and the peninsula.
One other thing is missing from the map, so the Veterans Memorial, we talked about that. We have synthetic turf fields we're working on in right.
In this one?
Yeah, so I think it would be important to identify that, and that's
that
should be pre-phase, I think, to one.
Oh, yeah. We'll actually label it.
Pre-phase. You don't need to take my words, but I think it's important to recognize those two elements. Councilmember Scarborough?
Do I understand the public's opinion that six and seven are in the order they want, and not seven first and six second?
We can easily flip those two. Yeah, and I think for me, like, time is going to be an interesting discussion on priorities. I am not convinced at this point that seven isn't actually one of the more important phases for people. You know, I think. I think it'll be interesting to kind of hear. So far, most of the people we've heard from are more beach, play, love the playground, do more of the playground, improve this area. But I think there's a silent majority on that end.
So when you say seven, you're talking about the walking path down on the lake, in front of the lake, or in front of the old sockeyes.
Yeah.
And connecting with
exactly.
One of the things about step seven here on this one is that this is the one thing where we really have a partnership opportunity. Mm-hmm. And if there's someone who decides to develop this and develop it tomorrow, it could conceivably become phase one.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think that when we look at 1 through 6, these are the things that the city can choose to do on its own. But this one here, there's a very interesting potential for something to happen on the North Shore.
And if it does happen, it could be a lot less expensive and not have to be a floating boardwalk to get around the corner.
Customer discovery's form.
To take it further, that could play into the development of hotels instead of that building. I know we have a limited height there.
You've got a limited occupancy.
Occupancy?
Yeah, because it's under the airport. So you've got elevation, but you've also got occupancy there. Okay. Okay, anything further, Council? Anything else?
That's it.
All right. Thank you very much for coming in here today.
Thank you very much.
The dollar. Do you have any other business this evening? Motion to adjourn to Councilmember Davis, Councilmember Chapman. Any discussion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Abstentions? Motion passes 6-0. Thank you very much for adjourning. See you on November 14th.